Semitic-speaking peoples from the outside. These are peoples whom we call the Hyksos. They came into Egypt from Palestine around perhaps 1700 BC. They conquered Egypt by seizing control, really, of the Nile Delta, in other words, Lower Egypt, in other words, really the end of Lower Egypt, and then exercising a certain amount of control further south. What we can say is they really collected tribute from some of the big shots who had been prominent in Egypt during the Middle Kingdom, or the descendants of those big shots. To put it a little bit differently, we can say they were sort of running protection rackets in terms of how they managed Egypt. They did not physically take over sort of every square inch of Egypt and reduce all Egyptians to servitude under themselves. They were sort of a conquering minority who ruled from the north. Now, very gradually, hatred for this foreign rule led the Egyptians to begin to sort of organize themselves, led them to begin to try to unify in some way to drive out the Hyksos. And when they did this, when the Egyptians were able finally to drive out the Hyksos, they inaugurated what we call the New Kingdom. Now, this runs on for something like 5 centuries, from about 1550 to about 1075 BC. Now, the New Kingdom was driven by a couple of very basic dynamics. First of all, there was a desire to ward off future conquest. Remember, under the New Kingdom and under the Middle Kingdom, Egypt had been very largely isolated. It had been very free from any kind of foreign invasion. And then sort of the unthinkable happened and Egypt was conquered. So one of the things then that drove the New Kingdom was to ward off any possibility that someone would conquer Egypt. Now, the way, in a sense, to ward off this outside influence, to ward off outside conquest, was sort of preemptive. Strike your neighbors before they can strike you. And so we find the Egyptians for the first time building an empire. An empire that extended all the way into Mesopotamia, that extended to the west along the southern shore of the Mediterranean Sea, in the direction of what we would call Libya. Now, this new kingdom was really, in lots of ways, quite a remarkable period for the Egyptians. It was brilliant, and it was cosmopolitan. Egyptian culture spread very widely. We're going to bump into some examples in later lectures of the spread of Egyptian culture in precisely this period of time. But Egypt was now also, for the first time, open to cultural influences coming in from the outside, open in a very decisive kind of way. And specialists can see this in Egyptian art particularly. Some have found it, for example, in Egyptian literature, particularly in poetry, for example, that the Egyptians are now open to influences coming from outside the land of Egypt. So the New Kingdom, or as it's sometimes called, the New Empire, is a decisive period for the Egyptians. During this period, the Egyptians began to encounter also, as they spread to the east in particular, peoples called the Hittites. Now the Hittites were the first Indo-European-speaking peoples of whom we have secure historical information in this period. The Hittites, in Indo-European, basically means that they're speaking a language like the one I'm speaking now. English is an Indo-European language, as is French, as is German, as is Swedish, right? As opposed to the Semitic languages, for example, that were oftentimes spoken in the whole land of Mesopotamia. Now, the Hittites were basically expanding from their bases in Anatolia. Anatolia is, in antiquity, what we call Turkey today. It couldn't get called Turkey yet because the Turks hadn't come. We'll get Turks into Anatolia later in the course, so don't worry about that for now. For now, Anatolia, think Turkey. So, the Hittites are spreading south from Anatolia and spreading along the eastern shore of the Mediterranean Sea, just as the Egyptians are spreading to the north in the same area. They warred and warred and warred and warred over several centuries, actually. Finally, in 1274, at Kadesh, in what is today northern Syria, so think where that is. I mean, you're at Syria, you're about halfway between Egypt and Anatolia, all right? A great battle is fought between the Egyptians and the Hittites, and it was essentially a draw. It was really essentially a draw. Now, it's very interesting because we also have the treaty documents that were issued in both lands, in Anatolia and in Egypt, after this battle. And interestingly enough, domestic consumption being what it is, both claimed a great victory. Well, in fact, it wasn't a great victory for anybody. It was a draw. And probably what had happened, or perhaps we might put Kadesh into the context of a longer unfolding process, was these two states just wore themselves out in this long unfolding battle. And really, after the Battle of Kadesh, both more or less go into a state of decline. Now, they carry on for quite a while, but they are never really in the kind of powerful, preeminent, influential, dominating position that they had been for at least a brief period of time, say from 1500 or thereabouts, down to the Battle of Kadesh in 1274. So Egyptian history is not so terribly interesting to us from the standpoint of their great conquests, of their great empire building, all right? Is it perhaps the case then that what interests us about Egypt is the culture of Egypt? Well, let's talk about Egyptian culture a little bit then. What are some of its distinguishing characteristics? What are some of the things that are most interesting and important about it? Now, if we talk about Egyptian culture, everything starts with the pharaoh. This is really where our story begins. We could put tongue in cheek and say that, in a way, Egypt was a two-class society. There was pharaoh, and there was everybody else. But it's also important to emphasize, and